Tonight we're going to go back to last Sunday night's lesson, and we're going to finish up this lesson that is one about what we call the echoes of the Bible, helping you to see there's different ways the Bible brings out these great lessons. But number two, a lesson about the greatness of Jesus, and that, you know, we are all convinced of that, but we need to be reminded oftentimes of just what that means, how great Jesus really is, and to make sure that we are having the appropriate reaction in our life, that we're not allowing anything, whether permanently or even temporarily, to be above our love and devotion for Jesus. There is nothing that is worth substituting for Jesus. And so we're going to talk about the greatness of Jesus, the echoes of the Bible that tie Jesus back with Elijah and Elisha. So last time we talked about how Jesus himself made a connection to Elijah and Elisha when he went home to Nazareth. And then he told this story about where Elijah was sent to a Gentile widow and not an Israelite widow. And he told the story how Elisha saved not a leper of Israel, but a leprous man from Syria, from Aram. And then we talked about how later on, in essence through an echo, how Luke then echoes the second part of that story, where Elijah resurrects the widow's son, just as Jesus does the widow of Nain and her son. Elisha had a very similar story to that as well. And all of that makes a connection to Jesus with Elijah and Elisha. But to make this point, Jesus is like them. You make that comparison, but you have to also make that comparison that he's also different in the sense that he is greater. A greater miracle worker, a greater prophet. In fact, Jesus is the prophet. And so that's what these connections do. We talk about what is an echo? Well, a shadow is a connection that there's enough details there that you can see the connection, much like when Abraham sacrifices or almost sacrifices Isaac. We see the clear shadow, foreshadowing of Jesus' death. And even in that, you can see, well, that was a great obedience by Abraham. But then when you compare it to Jesus, that's even greater. Where Abraham was stopped from killing his son, God didn't stop. And he gave his son for a ransom for us, the perfect sacrifice. An echo is like a shadow, but not as clear, and a lot more what we say subtle. We talked about how Seinfeld had a few episodes that kind of did something like that. Another way of looking at these echoes, the younger generation will get this, they're kind of like Easter eggs. Not like the Easter eggs you hide in your backyard, but like on videos. Recently, they came up with this Easter egg thing. It's like a hidden little button that's really hard to find. But if you know about it, you can hit that button and it opens up to other things, other videos and so forth that are hidden, that are very subtle. You have to work at finding them, but that's kind of what that is. And so as you really start to look at the Gospels, you'll see that there's definitely a very subtle but a definite connection to Jesus and these two great prophets of the Old Testament. We're going to look at a few more tonight. For example, let's go over to Luke chapter 9 and in verse 51. This is where Jesus is traveling down to Jerusalem, and instead of going around Samaria like so many Jews did, he goes through Samaria, and this is what happens. Luke 19, 51 through 56. I got the wrong chapter there. Nine. It's right up there. See, song leaders are not the only one that mess up on numbers. All right, Luke 9:51. When the days were approaching for his ascension, he was determined to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers on ahead of him. And they went and they entered a village of the Samaritans to make arrangements for him. But they did not receive him, that's the Samaritans, because he was traveling toward Jerusalem. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" Now, I want to stop right there. Hold your place there. But here you have James and John in the story, you remember, where they go, "Hey, the Samaritans are not receiving you. You want us to rain fire, command fire to come down from heaven and to just consume them." You ever ask yourself, where did they get that idea? You know, do you walk around the, you know, your daily life and looking at people doing sinful things and you're kind of like praying to Jesus, "Do you want me to command fire to come down upon them?" You know, you don't read about that in the New Testament. But here's James and John, the sons of thunder, wanting to rain fire down upon them. Well, the interesting thing is, as a Jew reading this story, you're like, "Oh, well, back in the days of Elijah, there was a lot of fire that came down from heaven." And so James and John want to command fire to consume the Samaritans. Well, hold your place there, and let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 18. This is the first story where you have fire and Elijah. And it's a well-known story, one of the most popular stories of Elijah, where he is taking on the prophets of Baal. And it's up on Mount Carmel, and he says, "You build your altar," and all day long they're calling for Baal, and Baal doesn't do anything. And finally he says, "It's my turn." And he builds his altar, and he makes a moat around it, he douses it with water. And look, if you would, at verse 36 beginning, 1 Kings 18:36. "At the time of offering and the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet came near, and he said," he prayed to God, "O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are a God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all of these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again." Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their face and they said, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." And Elijah then commands the people to seize the prophets of Baal and to kill them. And so in a way, you don't have fire consuming the people, but in a way, as the prophets die, by the people responding to God's response, God's fire, in a sense, the fire consumes these prophets. And so you have fire coming down and consuming the unbelievers. As a result, what happens? The people, at least for the moment, accept God and come back to God and obey God because of the fire that consumed them. Now, go back to Luke chapter 9. Because as Elijah's fire consumed the prophets of Baal to bring Israel back to God, look at what Jesus' response is. In verse 55, chapter 9, verse 55, "But Jesus turned and rebuked them. And he said, 'You do not know what kind of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy man's lives, but to save them.' And they went on to another village." And so you have the ending, you drawing into a story, but you have an ending that's very different, where he says, no, we're not going to have a fire that consumes them. Why? Because Jesus is bringing about a greater grace and a greater compassion and a greater understanding and a greater invitation. And so he says, you don't know what spirit you are of. And so by Jesus not bringing the fire, he is bringing the people to God's grace, and in essence to keep them from the consuming fire, the greater fire, that eternal fire as it is described in the Bible. But there's another story that is even closer to this one that involves Elijah. Go back, if you would, to 2 Kings chapter 1 now. 2 Kings, the first chapter. And this is a story where the king is a man by the name of Ahaziah. And Ahaziah falls, has this great fall at his palace. And as a result of the fall, he becomes very sick, perhaps an infection of some sort as a result of the fall. And he wants to know if he's going to get well. Well, the interesting thing is he sends a delegation of 50 and their commander to Elijah to find out from God if he's going to get well. The interesting thing is that he's denied God. He's want nothing to do with God. He has his own prophets that tell him what he wants to hear, all the good things. But when he really wants to know if he's going to live, in other words, when he really wants to know if he the truth, he goes to Elijah. And God, through Elijah, basically says, it's not going to be that easy for you. And so, look at verse 10. And Elijah replied to the captain of 50, if I am a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50. Then fire came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. That's kind of what James and John perhaps were thinking about, these stories of Elijah and the fire consuming the unbelievers. Well, then he sends in verse 11 a second group of 50 and their commander, and the same thing happens. And then he sends a third group of 50 and their commander. But here's the point. The third one, verse 13, he came and he bowed down on his knees before Elijah and he begged him. And he said, oh man of God, please let my life and the lives of these 50 servants of yours be precious in your sight. And so that's exactly what happens. They are spared. And it's this third group that really reflects what Jesus is doing in the Gospels, where there is the compassion, where there is the ones who are looking at, or looking for the humility of this third commander. And so you have this story very, very much connected to this echo that's found in Luke. And finally, you have 2 Kings chapter 2, Elijah and another fire that comes from heaven. Remember this fire? It's the fire, a whirlwind of fire that comes and picks up Elijah and takes him into heaven. And so there's at least three times in the story of Elijah you have fire coming down from heaven. And it appears that Luke is drawing upon that story. He's the only one that tells us about James and John and wanting to do that. Isn't that just, it's kind of interesting how that just pops out. Well, many believe that's an echo going back to making the point that Jesus is greater. Let's look at another one. Let's go over to Luke chapter 9 and back to Luke 9. And let's look at what happens next. Now that we have this story about James and John and the fire consuming them, verse 57, the very next story Luke tells us.
And as they were going along the road, someone said to him, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And he said to another, follow me. But he said, Lord, permit me first to go and bury my father. But he said to him, allow the dead to bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim everywhere the kingdom of God. Another also said, I will follow you, Lord, but first, look at this, but first permit me to go and say goodbye to those at home. But Jesus said to him, no one, after putting his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. This has always been kind of an interesting story where you've got these people that want to follow Jesus, and then Jesus, in a way, says no. He like turns them away, and that's kind of confusing to people. You've got these three different potential followers, each of them Jesus apparently turning away. Well, let's go back to now Elisha, a story involving Elijah and Elisha. Let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 19. 1 Kings chapter 19. This is the story where you might remember Elijah was told to go and to appoint his replacement. And his replacement was going to be Elisha. And so this is how he calls him in 1 Kings 19 and in verse 19. And so Elijah departed from there, and he found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, while he was plowing with the 12 pairs of oxen before him, and he with the 12. And Elijah passed over to him and threw his mantle on him. And he left the oxen, and he ran after Elijah, and he said, please, let me kiss my father and my mother, those at home, then I will follow you. And he said to him, go back again for what I have done to you. And so he returned from following and took a pair of oxen, sacrificed them, boiled their flesh with the implements of the oxen, and gave it to the people, and they ate. And then he arose and followed Elijah and ministered to him. Elisha is basically told, you follow me. That's the meaning of putting the mantle. It's like passing the torch, right? And Elisha understands that. But what does he say? He says the exact same thing as the third follower. I'm going to follow you, but first, let me go say goodbye to those at home. And Jesus says, no. To follow me, you've got to go right now. You don't look back. Now, Elijah says to Elisha, fine, go, do this. And I'm not sure if he ever does that. It says he sacrifices, then he follows him. But you have this difference where Elijah goes, yes, go ahead, stop following me. Do what you need to first. And then you have Jesus, quite the opposite, saying, no, you're not ready to follow me, to be my disciple. What you have in essence is that these are three things that those under the Jewish law were very important to them. You see this even in the New Testament. I want you to see this, right? Houses, having a place that you can shelter your family and you can grow a household and all of that. In fact, remember, Jesus even tells them, don't be anxious for what you're going to eat and what you're going to cover yourself with. Don't be anxious about those things, which goes to show us those were the things that the Jewish people were worried about and spent a lot of time trying to make sure that they had proper covering for their family. You have the burying of the dead. One of the things that you know is that the Jews, very important, they would bury their dead the same day that that person died. In the story of Jesus, you remember that they were kind of in a hurry to get Jesus off the cross and into the tomb because the Sabbath day was coming. And having a proper burial was very important to them. And so this potential follower says to Jesus, "Let me first go bury the dead, and then I'll be ready." And remember, even in the death of Jesus, the burying of Jesus, it wasn't just putting him in a tomb, that the women came with linen wrappings and spices and all of that. There was a very important process the Jews went through to bury someone, even the very day that they departed. You have family, very important. Your family is very important in the Jewish law, right? In fact, it was very important you could trace your family all the way back to Abraham. Family was very important. That's where you have your strength and your support. In fact, Jesus says, as important family is, that he who loves father and mother more than me is what? Not worthy of me. And so in a way, this connection back to Elisha, in which again you would have kind of this deja, but that's the same thing Elisha said when Elijah told him to follow me. You have Jesus saying, when it comes to following me, I'm greater. And there's going to be a greater sacrifice, and there's going to be a greater standard and requirements if you want to be my disciple than there was with this great prophet Elijah. Now again, very subtle, but when you see that deja vu echo, it makes a lot of sense. This isn't Jesus just turning people away. Jesus is taking these things that were emphasized, that were very important under the old law and the Jewish people, and he's saying there's even something better, more important, greater, and you've got to have the appropriate loyalty and understanding of that. Let's go to Luke 23. Let's go to the final week of Jesus' life. Luke 23, and we're going to look at the first five verses. This is where the Jews finally condemn Jesus and they bring him to the Romans. And in Luke 23, verse 1, then the whole body of them got up and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And so Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you a king of the Jews?" And he answered him and said, "It is as you say." And Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they kept on insisting, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee even as far as this place." So here's this charge that is brought up against Jesus, that he is this troubler. He is accused of being the perverter of Israel. In fact, if you have the King James Version, this is the one time where they really get it a better translation than the more modern, because the word here that's used of this accusation is this diastrepho, which in Greek basically means perverter. A perverter of the Jewish way. A troubler of the Jewish law. And so here Jesus is being accused of being a troubler, a perverter of Israel and its law. Does that sound kind of familiar? Is there a little echo in the days of Elijah? Well, let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 18. And this is early on in the story of Elijah. You might remember that there's this great famine. And Ahab is very upset. He's blaming Elijah for all that's happening, all the people that are dying. And so he wants to find Elijah. And finally they come. He finally finds out where he is. And they come face to face, evil Ahab and the prophet Elijah. And look, if you would, at 1 Kings 18, verse 16. And look at this dialogue. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. And when Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is this you?" And look at what he says. "Is this you, you troubler of Israel?" It's almost the exact same wording of what we have Jesus being accused of. And so here Jesus comes before the rulers of the Jewish people, before Pilate, and he is accused of being the troubler, the perverter of Israel, just like Elijah was to the king of the land, the ruler of the land, Ahab. But notice what Elijah says, verse 18. And he said, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you have followed the Baals." So Elijah says, "I'm not the perverter. I'm not the you are the troubler." How's that compare to Jesus? Jesus doesn't say anything. But Jesus could very well have said the same thing to the Jewish leaders, that they really are the troubler one, the ones that have troubled the Lord. They are the ones that are breaking the commands of the Lord and twisting His purposes. And so we have this echo where Elijah says, "No, I'm not the troubler. You and your fathers are the troublers." But Jesus doesn't say anything. And it's as if Luke is letting the echo say it for him. We know exactly how this ends. We know exactly what the next line is. But Jesus doesn't have to say it. It's already been said. And finally, let's look at Luke 24 and in verse 13. Luke 24... And we're going to look at verse 13. We're not going to look at all of that. But in Luke 24, beginning verse 13, we have the story of a post-resurrection appearance. We have these two disciples. They're leaving Jerusalem. They're on the road that goes to the town called Emmaus. Right? So let's pick up on the story, verse 13. "And behold, two of them were going that very day to a village named Emmaus, which is about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about these things which had taken place. And while they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them. But their eyes were perverted from recognizing him." So let's stop right there for a second. You've got this story of Jesus on the road to Emmaus, these two disciples, and you have this story where you have this pattern where there's first this blindness. Not that they're literally blind, but they're blind to who Jesus is. They can't recognize him, okay? Then you have the following. So they're walking with Jesus, in a sense, following him. And so as we go on, they're walking with him, The traveling with him, verse 15, verse 16, their eyes are prevented from seeing him. Verse 17, he said to them, what are these words that you are exchanging with one another as you are walking? And they stood still, looking sad. And one of them, named Cleopas, answered, and he said to him, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of these things which have happened here in these days? And so they start talking along the way. And look, if you would, at verse, let's see here. Okay, verse 29. But they urged him, saying, stay with us, for it is getting toward evening, and day is now nearly over. So he went in, and he stayed with them. And what do? They eat. And when they had reclined at table with him, he took bread and he blessed it, breaking it. He began giving it to them. And their eyes were open, and they recognized him. And he vanished from their sight. And they said to one another, were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking to us on the road? While he was explaining the scriptures to us. And so they got up that very hour and they returned to Jerusalem. And so they waste no time and they return to Jerusalem. And so you've got this, they're blind, they can't recognize Jesus. They travel, they follow with him, they eat, and then what? Their eyes are open and their heart burns within them. Well, again, you may never have made this connection, but let's go back to 2 Kings chapter 6. One of my favorite stories of Elisha. 2 Kings chapter 6. And let's look at verses 16 through 23. Now, what has happened is that Elisha has his servant with him. And the king of Aram is very upset because he's always made these plans, these attack plans, these battle plans, and every time he makes these plans, Israel knows what they are. And he thinks that there's someone in his army that is being a spy, being a traitor, and they finally say, no, it's the prophet Elisha. He tells them every plan that you make, every move. And so he says, hey, bring Elisha to me. And so the whole army comes down to Dothan where he is. And we pick up the reading as the servant sees this great army that has surrounded the city. And he knows we're in trouble here. If they're here for us, we're dead meat. And so verse 16, so he answered, Elisha answers him, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And the servant's thinking, what are you talking about? There's only two of us. And then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire, all around Elisha. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, strike this people with blindness, I pray. And so he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. And Elisha said to them, this is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek. And so they brought them to Samaria. And when they had come to Samaria, Elisha said, O Lord, open the eyes of these men, that they may see. And so the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw. And behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. And the king of Israel, when he saw this, he said to Elisha, my father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them? And he answered, you shall not kill them. Would you kill those who have taken captive with your sword and with your bow? No, instead, set bread and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master. And so we prepared a great feast for them. And when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away. And they went to their master. And the marauding bands of the Arameans did not come again into the land of Israel. Do you see the echo? You've got the blind, the following, the eating, then the open of the eyes, the hearts burning within them. You've got, number one, Elisha's servant's eyes are what? They were blind, but now they're open. And now what does he see? He sees this great angelic army. And now he knows what Elisha means when he says, we have more people than they do. His eyes were open to the unseen army. But then you have the same pattern where you have blindness. The army of the Arameans is struck blind because of the prayer of Elijah. And Elijah says, hey, come, travel with me. Come follow me. I'll take you where you want to go. And there's all of a sudden the eyes are open. And they see they're in big trouble. And the king says, hey, should we kill them? We can win this great victory. They're right here. We've got them surrounded. And anyone in the world that knows anything about military strategy knows you've got the upper hand, you strike right now, you're going to win victory. But that type of victory, if it was won, how long would that last? I'm sure the Arameans would have gathered another army to bring revenge. But you've got this story where you have this great victory that is won without fighting. Instead, it's a great victory where their eyes are open and they set before them this feast of bread and water and they eat with them and then send them back home. And not only did they win victory in that sense that they were not attacked, but the Arameans never come back, never attack. So all future attacks and battles are gone through this very interesting way of having compassion on that and giving them this feast of food and then sending them away in peace. And that's exactly what we have. The story of Jesus taking the blind, opening their eyes and saying, follow me and I will give you this great banquet, this great feast called salvation. We take bread and the fruit of the vine every Sunday to remember the great victory that came through the compassion of Jesus Christ. And so these are subtle Easter eggs, if you will, in the Bible. But when you start to recognize them, they do have kind of this powerful connection to show Jesus in many ways. And so these echoes compare Jesus to these two great prophets, Elijah and Elisha, to what? Well, number one, to show Jesus is greater. Number two, to show that following Jesus was going to require more. You can't turn your back to the world and follow Jesus. When he says, are you ready? You've got to follow him right then. Isn't it interesting in the book of Acts, you have people, when they hear the gospel, they don't turn back, they don't wait. They are baptized the same hour of the night. Look, water. What prevents me from being baptized? These echoes compare Jesus to show Jesus and Elijah's ministry were really about the same thing. They were really about winning a victory over sin. But even Elijah and Elisha show us oftentimes the way Jesus did this. Through compassion, through grace, through his own sacrifice. Jesus is everything. Don't leave tonight without being on the right page, the right side of Jesus. If you haven't been giving Jesus the great throne in your heart, the top spot, if you've been turning back to the world and saying, first let me experience this, let me have this, let me do this, then I will dedicate more time to you, change that tonight. And if we can help you do that, won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing. The voice of the Savior.